Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and today I am joined by Alana Pierce,
hi,
Andrew Goldfarb,
hello,
and Miranda Sanchez.
Oh.
Yes, thank you guys so much. How's everyone's week going this week?
Exciting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been exciting.
Yeah.
A lot of squealing.
It's been a little it's been a little eventful. Yeah, obviously, new Pokemon games have been announced. One has even been released, which is incredibly exciting. We're going to talk about both of them today. We also are going to have a little bit of a break in the middle of the show where we're going to world premiere the exclusive trailer for Crystal Crisis on Switch. And then we're going to talk to Nicholas Devs. They're actually here in our office at IGN, and we're going to talk to them about Crystal Crisis and Ikaruga, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But before we get into that stuff, let's go back and talk about Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee. Mm-hmm. I mean, all right, I want to judge the excitement level here. On a scale from 1 to 10, how does everyone feel about
crying.
This? Crying.
10? like a 10 and a half or something.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to crying.
Look, as soon as they said that it was based in Kanto is when I was like, oh, I'm sold. Yeah. I love Kanto. I have those gym badges tattooed on me. So it's like pretty important to me, and I love the original 150. But the thing that makes me less excited is that I don't know how the battle system is going to work. I don't know how grinding is going to work. I know it's not a true RPG and there's still one coming, but I don't know how that stuff is going to work. So I kind of want more information right now.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it. I was actually like tweeting direct messaging with Andrew over the weekend, and he schooled me on some Pokemon information, which thank you. I appreciate that. But I was also a little worried about like, okay, is this basically Pokemon Go, like the video game essentially? Like, I know that it's, you know, focused on trainer battles and you're not going to have any sort of random encounters with Pokemon in the wild. So that kind of like throws me off. Like, how much is battling going to be focused here?
Mm. It seems like a perfect hybrid.
Yeah.
Like, it's like all of the catching and encounters are like Pokemon Go. So no random encounters. You see them in the overworld. You click them to interact with them. That stuff is very Pokemon Go-esque and throwing Pokeballs instead of battling. But then the trainer battles, like the trainers you meet along the route, that seems to be super core Pokemon.
Right. I mean, it's hard to say from what we've seen so far, but all the animations that we've seen from the battles in the original trailer and announcement seem just as intense as you would in any other Pokemon game.
Right.
And so I think this is just a great marriage of that nostalgia and then also bringing in the Pokemon Go players to like get that full Pokemon experience.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, we're going on your first adventure again, but in a new way. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Nintendo and Game Freak, they've been so like very well in their messaging, or they've been getting that message across real nice that this is really kind of meant for and I want to say like the fans, the Pokemon fans that we are, I guess, or at least I am, where I grew up with Red, Blue, and Yellow, and then I started falling off a little bit later, like when you know, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon came out, or Sun and Moon came out, like eventually.
It's like that I was really recently.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, you know, even on like the DS, like I kind of drifted away from it, but I still care so much about those original first 151 Pokemon.
Yeah.
So like for me, this is so cool that they're focusing on that. It's totally a trip down memory lane. And being back at the Kanto region.
When I think a lot of people feel that way, right? Like we were playing Pokemon Go a couple weeks ago and you were like, I don't care about these. Like, you know, it's like,
yeah, like get out of here.
Yeah.
And I still played them all, but it's like the ones that are like embedded in my heart are the Kanto original 150 or 150.
Exactly.
I don't count as Mew as an original Pokemon.
Yeah, and good reason too, because like that's what we grew up with, right?
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
We had the anime to go with it and all the books and whatever else you played with the card game. I think this is a really interesting thing though, because when I was talking to Casey about like interviews she had about this,
which you can read in IGN.
Yes, yes, please go read those. I believe someone said that the idea with this game was that they had the, I guess, conception that maybe, or perception, that a lot of younger kids couldn't play Pokemon Go because they didn't have smartphones.
Mm. Right.
And like maybe you could like share your parents' phone or something, but that's not really acceptable, I guess, for them, and that they really wanted to share this experience with everybody, or the Pokemon Go experience specifically.
It does seem like it's supposed to be slightly more kid-friendly, and that it is taking out some of the like grindy aspects of Pokemon, which I personally love, but it being more accessible is great. But it also seems like they're trying to get the audience who loves Pokemon Go, who really jumped on the train when it launched last year, the year before?
2 years ago.
Almost exactly
2 years, yeah.
That's crazy. So like all the people who I think probably were people who were only familiar with the original Pokemon who jumped on that and haven't played in a while.
Yeah, and it's like even Pokemon Go does a really smart thing where it's Gen 1, but it's Gen 1 sort of through the lens of Gen 7, meaning like you still have some things that were added later, like types and genders and things that came in later generations. I think they've done a smart way of like you have those original Pokemon, but they're sort of like slightly colored by the more modern perspective. And like I'm glad like Alola and forms are still going to be in this, because like I feel like it would be weird to not acknowledge that that stuff exists, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's such a great idea that they're blending like Pokemon Go aspects with this Pokemon game on Switch, because obviously like, you know, the game has been downloaded, they said, I think they said something like over 800 million times, which is an amazing number, especially for a mobile game download. So like, you know, for Nintendo to sort of look past that would be foolish, and they're geniuses for trying to bring some of that audience that enjoyed Pokemon Go so much and sort of introduce or reintroduce the core, I don't want to call this a core game because it's obviously not a core game, but almost core style gameplay of what we know of Pokemon with Pokemon Go.
So you're saying this isn't really a remake of Yellow so much as a reimagining, because there are so many differences here. And I think, like you're saying, it's really smart that they're trying to integrate those parts from Pokemon Go, but kind of going back to the kids and parents thing, like you could see like maybe some parents were really interested in Pokemon now that they play this with their kids or they went on walks. I saw that a lot, like when I was first playing Pokemon Go, I went to a park and like there's just like all these kids and parents and teens and just all sorts of people out playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now this, because of that couch co-op feature too, could be like a really awesome chance for like parents to play with kids.
Being co-op sounds really cool.
And just
cool.
anybody to play with another person because that will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's like one of the things it's taking really smartly from Pokemon Go is that like what makes that game great is that sense of community to it. It is that sense of like walking around with a friend or like, when it was like really big at launch or even now on Community Day, like walking down the street and running into like 100 other people playing is like this really cool feeling. And like that shared journey, I think, is really powerful and something we haven't really gotten. Like there's kind of like the good natured adversarial like battles in Pokemon, but cooperative in essentially a core game is really cool. I think that's
also
super
like
fun.
The only game that I've ever played, the only like core-ish Pokemon game that I've ever played on a TV was Pokemon Yellow through the like pack that you could put in your N64. You could play it through Pokemon Stadium. And that was the best. And now it's like, we're getting that. We're getting to play a Pokemon game on a TV co-op. Like that's so cool.
Get that core one next year. That will also be on TV, which is super weird. It's going to be really weird not having that second screen, but they're going to figure it out and be fine.
Yeah. I'm really curious, like this game, it's funny because like, I'm the only weirdo because like so many, I think that's such a cool thing. And the idea of that console Pokemon like open world thing has been the dream for like a decade.
Yeah.
But it is funny to me, like I'm really curious to see how Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu work in handheld mode.
Yeah.
Because they've shown like obviously with Pokemon Go, I'm like,
you just have to throw your Switch.
My thing is like, I'm so practiced with curveball throwing on my iPhone. I'm curious if in handheld mode, it will be touch controls it can only be played in handheld.
I mean, it would totally make sense for them to incorporate touch controls in handheld mode. So
you would think so.
I just like, ultimately, I really hope this all plays as well as it looks.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to get into this. I mean, revisiting Kanto is really exciting, but not having to grind through it again after we've done it maybe twice, if you played the original and you played the maybe Yellow re-release.
Some of my questions are like, is it going to have the Elite Four? If yes, how do you level up to get there?
I mean, they had
multiple times.
So you still have CP. So that's probably a similar way with maybe with candy or something.
Well, and like leveling up in Pokemon Go is you get experience points, but they're from actions. So it's like to level up, it's like catching a Pokemon is 100 XP or whatever. Like they could take that system, which is a very simplified kind of RPG mechanic.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're right. Like maybe it will only be battles reward you like your Pokemon. Like, so the weird thing,
there are still trainer battles. It could just be for money though as well.
Yeah. And like we talk about like transferring from Pokemon Go, like in Pokemon Go, you have CP, which is that combat power. And then you have three values. You have three IVs. You just have attack, you have defense, and you have HP. But in the core games, obviously, you have six values. And the way this is going to work is when you transfer a Pokemon, you have to recatch it in Pokemon Go Park. I'm assuming the reason you have to recatch it is because it's going to re-roll the stats for those other three missing values.
Right.
But what's interesting about that is, I don't like if I have 100% IV Pokemon in Pokemon Go, I'm not going to want to transfer it to this if it's going to have three stats that are perfect and then three crappy stats that were randomized.
Ooh,
you know?
That's a great point.
So I'm really curious to see like it's
strategy.
Well, that makes also sense why you can't transfer your Pokemon back to Pokemon Go.
Exactly. Because then they would have, and like they've kind of had that before when Pokemon Bank got introduced, because obviously Gen 1 Pokemon didn't have some of the attributes of the later gens. And so those were kind of rerolled too. I'm just curious to see how they handle some of those like really nerdy logistics. And I know in the announcement on night one, they're not going to get into that level of detail, but like that's the stuff I think will be really interesting when they start.
I'd be so
about
down
it.
If they did, though. Like, here's how stats will work. Here's the back end. Like, I'd be so on board. But one thing I'm curious about, and we've spoken about this before, but I like that you can see where Pokemon are and decide which you want to catch. I like the grinding in Pokemon. I have a lot of fun with it. But one thing is having a Gyarados is always really important to me. Every time I played through the original Pokemon games, it takes a long time to find a Magikarp sometimes, and it's nice you'll just be able to see where it is and catch it. Is that going to happen with the legendary birds as well?
Yeah, and are there going to be candy? Because the one thing I hope doesn't transfer from Pokemon Go is the candy system.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, the idea of not having to grind, it's like, I don't want to have to deal with candy. I'd just rather my Pokemon level up through battling.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
I'm assuming that if that is the case, if you do have to just level up through battling, they'll maybe reintroduce a place where you can go train because you're not going to have those wild battles to grind on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just a lot of really interesting things there.
I kind of didn't even realize how much there was to say about this until we started talking about
it. Exactly.
Like, my
so
thing
much.
With the birds is like, you know, if one of the things that's really special about finding Moltres and Articuno and Zapdos is that they are sitting in the world when no one else is, and you're trying to find them. It's like, are they just going to be there like every other Pokemon is?
Well,
like, in a cave full of just Zubats sitting on the screen?
That's a really interesting thing I'm curious about, too. Like, you know Pokemon Yellow so well, and like, you know Gen 1 so well. Like, those games, like, I started to replay Pokemon Yellow in that recent re-release, but like I haven't gone back really and played through those games to remember them in a very long time. But I'm curious how one-to-one this is, because it does, like you found that tweet earlier, they refer to it as based on. They're not saying the word remake or anything. And so
I hope the Kanto map is the same.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering, because like Final Fantasy 14 recently brought in Ivalice from Final Fantasy 12, but it's not completely one-to-one. Like you can't go to Rabanaster and know where you're going blindfolded or anything. It's just kind of very heavily influenced by that aesthetic. And so like here, I wonder if it's kind of similar. Like they sort of took landmarks and took big things and they're the same, but I wonder if like the roots are the same or things like that. Like I don't think we know yet.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I do hope they have the Elite Four and stuff in there as well, like all the gym battles that you come to expect and love.
Those three Dragonites.
We'll for sure have Mewtwo, because they showed Mewtwo at the end, and Mewtwo was something you could find. Yeah. So
I wonder if they won't, like, because like the funny thing is, like, I joked about this on Twitter, but like I have 151 Pokemon in my Pokedex right now in Pokemon Go, and it's like they've already said you'll have to play to a certain point to be able to transfer them, but when I play to that point, like halfway through the game or whatever, do I just have a full Pokedex? And like, can I transfer legendaries? Can I transfer, like, the one thing they did say is that shinies will definitely transfer, which is cool.
Can my Pikachus keep their hats?
And that's a big question too. I know, exactly.
I want like, a team of Pikachu. I want them all to have hats.
Yeah, I'm really like, some of those details are going to be really
Pikachu follow
fun.
You?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it your buddy Pokemon?
I think you could probably assign the Pikachu that sits with you if you have Let's Go Pikachu.
Yeah.
And then
it's
you could probably
on your head and Pikachu on your shoulder. Yeah. And then I think it looks like in the trailer you can also have a second Pokemon that falls behind
you. Yes, you can for sure have one. And if you get a big Pokemon, you can like ride him and stuff. And like, there's
other
things.
That's right. They did show that.
I think they showed a Charizard using Fly potentially, because that's what it kind of looked like. Or
and that's what I mean by like Gen 1 through the lens of Gen 7. Like, it's really cool that they're bringing back ride Pokemon. It's really cool that like I don't think you'll need HMs in this game. Like I want them to kind of take the improvements that have come to the core games and apply them to this, because otherwise, like, I don't want to go, like, I have so much nostalgia for Gen 1 and I'm so excited about it, but I don't want to, like, get the shortcomings of those games either, you know?
Right, right. And I don't think they would do that, because this is, you know, 2018. I think they're going to make sure that it's all improved and kind of the experience that we had come to expect from Pokemon at this point in time.
Totally.
Can we talk about the Pokeball Plus?
Yeah. Let's talk about the Pokeball Plus. I think we actually have a picture of it we can pull up here in case you haven't seen it yet. But apparently the Pokeball Plus is compatible with Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee and also Pokemon Go. All right, so there's a lot of things here. All right, now that I got a closer look at it, that like circle in the middle looks like a D-pad. An analog stick. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a button on the top, there's the D-pad, or the not D-pad, the analog stick in the front, and then a charging port in the back, and that's it. So it doesn't have all the buttons of a Joy-Con. It's not like it has the face buttons, and it doesn't have triggers. It doesn't have all that stuff.
So no one can necessarily finish Dark Souls with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone keeps saying this. I'm like, you never know.
Oh, someone will figure it out.
They have like bananas or potatoes or something.
But they say you can play the entirety of Pokemon Let's Go with one Joy-Con, right?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. Like, to really quickly get out of the way, the Pokemon Go integration for this, it's cute that they're doing it, but like this thing, they said it has roughly a 3-hour battery life.
Yeah.
And, like, it makes noises and it lights up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's huge as compared to the Pokemon Go Plus, which is like a little like watch type thing. Like, I don't think it's practical for anyone but kids.
I think it is cool as hell. I think the fact that you can walk around, you can have an external battery that you can just plug it into when your 3 hours is up, that you can like fling it while you're walking around playing an AR Pokemon game. I think that thing is the best. Like, I want that in the real world so bad, even if I look like an idiot.
Oh yeah, I'm going to carry mine around. Like, you can put it 100%. Purse if you want, or your backpack. That's you don't have to keep it on your belt.
What I find so funny about this thing is like it is obviously based on Gen 1, but they're actually bringing HeartGold, SoulSilver stuff into this, like, because this is much like the PokeWalker, and it's a lot like those Pokemon that follow with you on the screen is also a GoldSilver thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's really cool that they're doing
that. Yellow
had
that too. Meaning,
Pikachu.
I mean, the second, the like extra bonus companion, I guess.
So it's like the PokeWalker, as in you can actually put one of your Pokemon inside of this ball.
Yeah.
Risky and then business.
Do we know yet what we get from that, though? Like, what sort of benefits?
So, for sure, I think they find things as you're traveling. So, like, maybe they could level up, or they'll find items, which is what they did in with PokeWalker.
But it only works for 3 hours. And then it runs out of battery.
That's
still a long time to walk, though.
Yeah. And people are trying to figure out, like, now some people are saying that might have just meant that it takes 3 hours to charge, as opposed to it only has 3 hours of charge. Like, people are figuring that stuff out at the moment.
I imagine, like, unless you're using it a ton, then it probably wouldn't do much. I mean, like,
3 hours
PokeWalker
is a pretty long time to walk around holding a ball.
But I mean,
if you're actively using it.
If you compare it, though, to Go Plus, or, you know, what we've been, I have one, I'm sure you have one too, right, Andrew? Yeah. Like, that thing, that battery lasts like over a month sometimes. So like you don't ever have to worry about it. This I'm a little worried about people who might be interested in using it for something like Pokemon Go.
That's why this is a really cool accessory for Let's Go. I feel like it's impractical for Go for that exact reason.
I mean, I completely agree that it is impractical, I feel like, but I love it.
Maybe 3 hours of charge time for like as a controller would make a lot more sense because you're actively using it constantly to control your game.
Absolutely.
As opposed to if you're just walking around with it, I'd assume the life would be a lot longer because you're not, I don't know, what are you doing while you're walking around? Like,
you just
pressing
hit a button.
The button and just like spamming
so
the
you can't
like,
play
cry?
Pokemon Go with the Pokeball.
No, it's just
for, sorry, I mean, the game's one in the dock, is what I'm saying. You can't use it as a Joy-Con.
You can for Let's Go, just not for Go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For Let's Go, it literally replaces a Joy-Con, is what is the impression I get.
And then you just take it with you.
Yeah, and then you put a Pokemon in it, and like they were talking about how, based on the vibrations and like the haptic feedback, it will feel like a living Pokemon is inside of it. So it will like vibrate, like
Does it have like HD rumble or is it?
I guess like
same as the Joy-Con.
There's a Masuda quote that like he wants it to feel like what it would feel like if they're like, it's almost like, what a weird creepy comparison, but like it does. It feels like when people talk about like a baby kicking, like it's like that's seriously what it sounds like they're going for.
Yeah,
still love it.
Like, I publicly apologized already on Twitter. It's like, I'm bringing this thing with me everywhere.
Can I buy three
I
of
don't
them
care.
And walk around
that's
like
what
with
I'm
Ash and his
like,
belt? Like,
can I have my core trio or something? Like, you know, half your team you love more than the other half.
Oh, absolutely.
That's just me at least.
I always just have three.
Yeah, like there's three that I really love and there's the three that I trade out.
Yeah, and like, especially when you had HMs, you're like, you're only my party because you know Cut, you idiot. Yeah.
It's like, well, I have to pull you out of the bank for me.
Sometimes I have two Gyarados.
Yeah,
how committed I am to games.
Man, I really hope they abandon candy so that it can just be through training because I feel like that's so much more interesting than...
I feel like that's more likely.
Yeah.
Candy seems a little weird of like, here, now that you can finally see all the Pokemon in the overworld and you don't have to just hope that you find one, it would be weird for them to say, well, now you just have to keep finding the same one and catching it in order to get candy.
But the cool thing is I can give you one of the shiny Gyarados I have because they have trading. Ooh. You can transfer. So there's a very one-way path because I can go from Go to Let's Go and then from Let's Go to your Let's Go. So it's like there's
that's
trading
cool.
between Let's Go, just
that
not
mean
between
those Pokemon
Go.
Are being duplicated though?
No.
Because it'll still exist in your Go.
It doesn't. When you transfer it from Go, you lose it.
Oh.
And that's kind of to the point I was saying earlier, like my strong Pokemon Go Pokemon, I'm absolutely not going to transfer because I would worry about the values and how they'll be randomized. But I especially like... The cool thing about Pokemon Go not being tied to a console is that like the location stamp on some of those Pokemon, like I'm like, I caught this, you know, in Germany. I have like a Mr. Mime from like a bunch of different countries in Europe. Like if that doesn't transfer over, I don't want to, you know, take it out of my game.
Yeah.
So that part's going to be really interesting that like the people who are hardcore Go players, I would imagine will just have some Pokemon that keep in this. But like, yeah, my weakest Articuno, I'll just
throw it in. So I wonder on that note, and I'm sorry to keep bringing up legendaries, but I'm very interested in them, if the capturing of legendaries will be the same as it maybe is in Pokemon Go.
Like through raids?
Like a special event or
like,
something?
Yeah. Right, like something where you need your strongest Pokemon to be able to catch them. I'm just so against the idea that I can walk up to a Moltres and just fling a ball at it a bunch of times and catch it. I don't want that.
I really hope they have events.
I love that stress of you know, being like, oh, I need to get it down to a slither of health, but if I kill it, then I'm screwed. Like,
yes,
I love
exactly.
that, and I don't want to lose that with all those legendaries, including Mewtwo. And I feel like if it's some kind of event that can be integrated into Pokemon Go, that would be cool.
Well, we know that they're going to have, like, online battles, right? They did come out and say that. And then is there online trading as well?
I thought they said there wasn't online stuff. I might have misread that.
So there's been a back and forth about, like, there's a translation error, somebody said. Mm. Let me confirm with Casey's Twitter, because if you haven't checked it out already, Casey DeFreitas went out and wrote a whole bunch of stuff on this
game. She was actually at the press conference. Yeah, that was really cool. We were all very jealous of her.
And we have an extraordinarily long article up that is, like, absolutely all the information. It's quotes from Masuda from the interview she did. There's all kinds of great information in there that answers. You know, I still see people online talking about... like asking questions that have been answered. They're just not answered in the trailer. Mm-hmm. So like there is more information about this game out there than you might think.
Yeah,
so
there's
like
been a lot of new news.
Of course,
too.
Friend of the show, Kelly Plaguey's also been covering the hell out of it over at GameStop. So GameStop, GameSpot.
I do that
every time.
All do it.
So check that out as well. There is a bunch of stuff online.
For sure.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about Quest, though, I definitely want to touch a little bit about the game, the Pokemon game coming out in 2019.
Also, before we go on, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Casey confirmed that it was a misquote, and they are for sure having online battles and trading.
They are.
Which I thought was the case.
That's awesome. That's exciting. Yeah, it would be weird not to, but especially because it launches after September when the online service is going
to
be.
Well, especially because it's a game that seems to be so much about sharing.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to not do that.
I wonder, I assume there's not, obviously, but it would be so cool if there was online co-op, too.
Yeah, I mean, probably not,
like
but...
Maybe like in an Animal Crossing way, you can just visit each other's cantos.
Ooh, yeah, I want that.
You wouldn't have your items, though, because the way co-op works is that you just share your inventory.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it would be so cool to see, like, if it is online-based in that way, then I can't see why they can't have stuff like events popping up where you could catch legendaries in a group or something.
Yeah.
That would be fun, but
we
can...
It feels like we're one step closer to that, like, canto that's just, like, full of players where you can, like, actually battle other trees.
Right?
RPG I just want so bad.
I know, yeah. It's so crazy. Like, and this really does feel like... it makes me very excited for what they're... the thing you just brought up, the 2019 game. Like, and I really hope they are looking at what made Pokemon Go popular... looking at the power of a lot of these things. Because don't forget, like we keep saying Pokemon Go is what repopularized Gen 1, but don't discount Sun and Moon bringing back the Alola forms.
For sure.
There was a lot of Gen 1 nostalgia even before Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. And so I think like we're in this really cool boat right now where like a lot of players are going to buy, like Switch is doing incredibly well. A lot of people are interested in the Pokemon brand that maybe didn't play like Black and White, or maybe they did lapse for a while. And I think it's going to be really, really cool seeing what that looks like when a brand new generation comes.
Well, that's what this is doing for me, essentially. I mean, it's you know, I got back into Pokemon with Pokemon Go. I was a huge like original fan, like I said earlier, but now knowing that this, you know, is essentially a reimagining of Pokemon Yellow, like I'm so excited for this. I cannot wait. And I can't honestly now wait for the Pokemon 2019 game with whatever that's going to be. And hopefully we'll see like what we were, you know, alluding to, like all of the graphical enhancements that people were wanting for that version of the game, you know.
Only I don't want the music to be upgraded.
Yeah,
just want the original music.
Yeah,
even in the trailer for Let's Go, the music was kind of weird.
No.
I was like,
it's more
this?
Like Pokemon Go music. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's funny because Pokemon Go added, I think it was the Lavender Town music during the Halloween event.
My favorite song.
Yeah, and it's so like when they added that to the game, I was like, oh, I just want this to be here. Yeah. This is the only time I've had sound on in 2 years.
Yeah. That one song isn't that great.
Yeah.
So Andrew, do you think that there's a chance that because they showed off in the trailer that you can give yourself. Or you can transfer a gift from Pokemon Let's Go to Pokemon Go, and then you get some sort of special Pokemon. Do you think that's going to be the first Gen 8 Pokemon?
That's what it seems. That's what it seems they're implying. They said the Pokemon account, not the Pokemon Go account, but the actual Pokemon account said it will be an all-new, never-before-seen Pokemon.
Right.
So, I don't think they would say that if they meant, like, oh, the first Gen 4 in Pokemon Go. Like, they mean a new Pokemon, I think.
The one new Pokemon that I've seen a lot of people speculating about is a new Eevee evolution of, like, a normal-type Eevee. So it's, like, Eevee,
Eevee-on.
But with, like, some cute fluff that's... rainbow and like just a different sort of
cute
a
rainbow fluff
form that kind of matches the other evolution.
I think that's such a cool idea because like there are plenty of types that we haven't gotten from Eevee, like maybe it will just be dragon type or whatever,
that's
but
what I'm saying,
but yeah, like that I think that's such a cool idea.
Just
and you showed me like art,
a bigger Eevee. There's like some really awesome fan art, just imagine what that could look like. It's kind of cool because it is, or at least Let's Go Eevee is obviously focused on Eevee and giving Eevee something special in that. It's like keeping that true Eevee form, if you know what I mean.
But that makes even more sense when you talk about Pokemon Go, because so Miranda brought up that theory to me, which makes a lot of sense, especially because if you have that version and you get an Eevee evolution, what they could do for the Pikachu version is that could be how they add Alolan Raichu to Pokemon Go. Because we just got Alolan Executor for the first time. For people who don't know, the Alolan forms, like Rattata has a regular form and then you evolve into Alolan Raticate and Sandshrew and Vulpix and a bunch of others. But for Cubone and Pikachu and Execute, they don't have Alolan base forms. They only have evolved forms. So Alolan Executor just got added and you can catch him in the wild. So Alolan Raichu would be
so
next.
Much.
Yeah.
He's just got that real long neck.
Tall.
Yeah,
I got a notification from Pokemon Go and it was like, oh, wow, look, a long neck. This man's in the game now. Like, all right, on board.
Which is
an interesting point. Do you think that Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee could be things that they continuously support and add more Pokemon to, like an online service?
Ooh, that'd be cool.
I mean, yeah, who really
Instead
knows?
Of releasing like, sequels?
This whole project is so interesting because, I mean, ideally it might do really well because of the Pokemon Go craze and like 150 craze, and we don't really know what this means for the future of Pokemon. So.
Yeah, that's why I'm really excited.
On how all this does.
Also, I do want to say really, really quickly, PSA, if you are getting back into Pokemon Go because of this, which I would highly recommend so you can get cool stuff to transfer. I put a quick thread on my Twitter that is how you can, you know, what the new features are, how you can catch up, but I'll have a much more evolved form of that on IGN early next week. So look out on IGN for kind of what you've missed if you played 2 years ago and you kind of lapsed.
Also check out the Pokemon Go wiki on IGN.com. Thanks.
Also that.
So I know we're quickly running out of time here. here, but we do want to talk a little bit about Pokemon Quest. And if you're not aware, it was announced. Yeah, it's adorable. It was announced and released on the same day. It's also a free to start game, so it's totally free. You don't have to pay any money. You can just start playing right away. But how do you guys feel about it? Like, what's your take on it? It's also going to be available on mobile next month as well.
And you can tell. Like, I like it. I've been playing it a little bit, but it's only been out for 2 nights when we recorded this. Like, I've played a little bit. It is very cute. It is totally, it reminds me so much of every mobile game. You know, you have energy that needs to recharge. Mm-hmm. You have very simple touch-based mechanics.
The premium currency.
Premium currency. You can spend $30 to get three different packs. They have kind of a normal, a great, and ultra pack.
Is 30 the most?
I think $30 is to get all of the other packs combined.
Okay.
And then they're like $5 each for some of the other ones.
So you're not seeing mobile prices of like $99 or something like that?
I think right now 30 is the highest. But okay. I think if I'm understanding it right, you could theoretically buy that multiple times because it just gives you extra tickets and extra items and stuff. It's very cute. You randomly get Pokemon. You cook. So you have to get ingredients and you cook, and that attracts Pokemon to you, and then you can catch them. And like, I think it's a really cute little game.
Yeah, it's a fun short experience. I think the mystery of why they're blocky, like they point that out specifically. It's like, hey, why are the Pokemon blocky? That's weird. is fun, but it's a very weirdly almost completely hands-off game.
Yeah.
As far as the action goes, there's a button you can press. It's just like auto attack. Just go.
Yeah, so I was watching the Americans finale last night, completely watching the show without looking away and just tapping like buttons.
My thing with this controversial take, yes, it's cute. I think that this is microtransaction bait. That this is just a game.
I think
people to spend money.
I mean,
and that's it.
Yes, yeah. But honestly, it's free to play game. That's what pretty much they are. I think you could get through this pretty easily. Yeah, it's just Pikachu. so you can get through this pretty easily without spending any money. I mean, I've seen people like.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not spending money.
It's like, easy not to. It just depends on like how you want to collect all the Pokemon. If you want to collect all the Pokemon,
not much to it, you know,
it's very simple. Like I said, for the action, whenever you're going into fights with your three Pokemon, when they go on expeditions is what they're called, you can press a button that has them auto use their moves, because they auto attack. They just like tackle pretty much,
and they only have two moves. It's super basic.
Yeah, up to two moves, I think, or maybe three. Is it up to
three? I don't know if I haven't gotten a third.
Okay, so for sure only at least two moves. Some only have one at the beginning depending on their level, and it's
so
just
funny.
Yeah, it's like cute, but there's not a whole lot to it. It's just a lot of systems
of it,
that you can
part of it
play.
Is the collecting it really does. I said it yesterday, but I really keep thinking of Neko Atsume, the cat collecting game on mobile. Like at a certain point, part of why I'm doing this is because it really is cool coming back to your base camp and seeing all the Pokemon you've caught.
Yeah, and then you attract Pokemon every 22 hours. One will just come visit you randomly, and then all the food that you leave out will attract a certain number of Pokemon depending on your pot and the kind of recipe you made.
Right.
I think there's like 17 recipes or something.
18. And you can attract like water types if you really wanted to try and get a Magikarp, like you can do that. I think it's really cool that right from the menu you can be like, I don't want this Pokemon to evolve. So it's like if you only want Eevee and definitely don't want Jolteon or whatever, like you can just basically turn on Everstone option without having to like find that item, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah. And then each expedition is, if you're watching, you can see wave based if you haven't played. It's fine. It's cute.
It's totally a good holdover.
A good distraction.
I mean, it's just that, like, for me, I'm, like, off-put by it. But if you just look at it as being, like, it's a kid's game, then it's fine.
Yeah,
totally. It's fine for kids.
It'll be great on mobile, just mindlessly.
That's the thing.
I think it's nice that they put this out on Switch, just because it's like, hey, we're going to have this on mobile, but you can also just play it on your Switch if you'd rather do that. Yeah. And I like it because it is bigger, you get a better sense for all the details, and you can admire the Pokemon a little bit more.
And an announcement and release strategy was brilliant, because everyone went, whoa, and they were excited for Let's Go. Yeah. They were thinking about Pokemon. It's only the original 150, and so they downloaded it. And like that was a really smart way to kind of front load this, and everyone's playing it. Maybe it'll be kind of like the Nintendo mobile games, where it's really, really popular for like a month or so, and then it kind of tapers off.
I feel like that's what it's going to be. Yeah. And I've already seen people clearing through these stages rather quickly. Like I was on the train this morning and saw someone on like the fifth stage already of like 8 or 9. I don't know how many there are.
There are people we follow that already have multiple shinies.
Oh like, yeah, that's crazy. People are really far in it already. But I honestly think that this game, it's great, like you said, that they released it on Switch, but I think it's going to do really well on mobile.
Yes.
I think on mobile is really where this game is going to be played. I'm sure like Andrew and I were already talking about how like we kind of wish it was on mobile right now.
Yeah, I mean,
is there
anything?
Or is it just
I think it's June
month?
29th.
Okay, cool.
But your progress doesn't transfer, which bums me out.
No. That's a real bummer.
Yeah.
Anything with a timer-based energy level thing just needs to be on mobile. Like, honestly, totally. Because it's like, it's just easier to get through really quickly and then just turn off your phone and then come back to it when your energy's done.
The very last thing I'll say, and I don't know if they've already clarified this, they probably have, I hope it works offline for the mobile version. Because, like, I assume the Switch version does just fine, but I don't know if on mobile you'll have to be connected for some reason.
Yeah.
Probably not, but I just, you know. Yeah. Like Mario Run was a weird case of...
Good point. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure. But we could talk about this probably for two shows. but unfortunately, we do have to move on. Thank you guys very much for joining me for this segment. But stay tuned for the next segment when we have the Nicholas people coming in to talk about Crystal Crisis and Ikaruga. And while you wait for us to come back, why don't you check out the world premiere exclusive opening cinematic for Crystal Crisis. I think you guys are going to like this.
Here we go.
And welcome back. I hope you guys enjoyed the world premiere of the opening cinematic for Crystal Crisis. Thank you very much for joining us. We've got a couple new faces here. Per Schneider.
Super new face.
Making a return, yes. And of course, Tyrone Rodriguez. Excuse me, I almost forgot your last name.
It's all right, I do all the time.
Yes, welcome welcome to NVC. This is your first time on, correct? But not your first time at IGN.
No, right. Hopefully not my last.
Exactly. Yes, definitely not your last. Tyrone Rodriguez is, of course, the president of Nicholas, so it is an incredible honor to have you here. Thank you so much. And you used to work for IGN, and now you're the president of Nicholas.
Per was my boss.
Yes.
Oh, you.
Well, he is my boss right now, so yeah, we can relate.
Okay, do you want me to leave?
It's okay. Nope. So yeah, you're here to talk a little bit about Crystal Crisis, of course, as we just saw, and then, of course, Ikaruga, which made its appearance on Switch. It's out now. So if you haven't bought it yet, you definitely need to get it. But it originally released on Dreamcast, and then you actually did the IGN review for the GameCube version of Ikaruga. Yeah.
I just remember that today. Like, I was looking up who reviewed Ikaruga, and we had multiple reviews of it. And if you're watching this, you can see it on screen. Here's Tyrone's review. I fixed a typo.
Thank you.
We'll be happy to hear. You gave it an 8.3, I think.
You
said, like, if you're into shooters, you definitely got to get it, but don't expect a standard shooter. This is much more puzzle-like. You warned people and endorsed it fully. Like, same story today. Yeah?
It hasn't changed, and that's why I wanted to play it on Switch. But it's one of my probably top, amongst all genres, probably top 10 games, and shooters probably my top shooter.
It's just so weird. The fact that you covered it and reviewed it, and then you now publish it. That's crazy. Did you get to meet the people behind it?
I got to meet Mr. Magao, who's the founder of Treasure. Which was a huge honor. It's hard not to fanboy when you're meeting somebody who's made like Dynamite Heady and Gunstar Heroes and Alien Soldier and all these really cool games that we played back in the 8-bit and 16-bit era. So it's been a really fun experience to be able to see it from the outside, write about it, play it for so many years, and now have other people play and be excited for it. Like, it's literally a whole new generation of players, and us as well, obviously.
Yeah, totally. And not to cut you off, but we do have someone here. It's the fourth chair.
Wow!
Mr. Chris Rausch. Welcome to the podcast.
What's up, Chris?
Good to have you here. You're good.
So,
very
Chris,
good.
You flew in just for the show from Orange County, and then, of course, everything got delayed and you got stuck everywhere.
Yes.
There we go. He told me what your last name means.
Oh, I know what it means, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get you nice and close to that microphone so everyone can hear you. There we go. Cool. And Chris Rausch, you are the creative director of Crystal Crisis, correct?
Yes.
Yes, cool. We're going to talk about that in just a second. We're currently talking about Ikaruga, and I want to know a little bit more about just the whole experience. So, like, I know that you had mentioned, you know, this Switch version is inviting for new players, of course, and it's a great trip down memory lane for us oldies. But I just got to say, I love the fact that I can play this game vertically in arcade mode. It is so cool, like, to be able to play your Switch in tabletop mode, because I know that feature, like we talked about before we started filming, was available in the GameCube HD remake, but I can't imagine too many people...
A tube TV.
Yeah, like twisting their TVs.
I think we did
have that.
Yeah. The TV did not recommend that.
It's not recommended. Those are like 200 or 300 pound TVs back then.
Yeah, it's a lot easier though. Of course, my standard stand does not stand up the Switch like that. You gotta find yourself something to prop it up. But it looks really nice in what is it, Tate mode?
Tate mode,
right? Japanese term for stand up. I think it's really interesting. Like Treasure was such a storied developer too, right? Like, all the classic Treasure games like Gunstar Heroes, we loved all those. I thought they were gone.
They're still around. They've been making games, and to my knowledge, they had done a couple of 3DS games for Capcom in recent years. But they're still around and kicking, and hopefully, I really hope that whether we work together again or not with Treasure, I hope that this can kind of inspire them to say, like, hey, our fans are still here. We should probably continue giving them what they want.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about Crystal Crisis. Now, we just debuted the world premiere of the opening cinematic, which is very exciting. I get really happy when I see characters from my favorite video games, like, you know, coming together to fight each other. Obviously, right. I'm a huge Smash Brothers fan, so this is really cool. So tell us a little bit about Crystal Crisis. What kind of a game is it? Because I'm not sure how many people out there are aware of it.
This is a puzzle combat game. So the scenario is set up like a fighting game where you've got players facing off against each other, and the characters are actually fighting while you do the puzzle matching and whatnot. You know, it's a genre with games like Puyo Puyo and Tetris Attack and all kinds. But there hasn't been anything like this for quite a while.
And so the difference is here, you don't just align the colors, you also have to activate them with crystals, right?
Yeah, so there are two different kinds of crystals. There are the standard colored crystals, and then there's shatter crystals. And so when the shatter crystals come down and touch the same color, they'll break them all, and that sends blockers over to your opponent. So the goal is to fill up your opponent's board and kind of choke them out.
Nice. So how many characters are in the game right now?
19 in the game right now.
19.
So it's a big, big roster.
Yeah. Wow, that is really big. So I know we've got Isaac in there from Binding of Isaac, correct?
Yes.
There's also Adam and Blackjack from Tezuka Productions. Mm-hmm. And is Shovel Knight in this one?
We haven't said anything yet.
No.
He's certainly not in what you've seen so far.
I mean, I don't know anything, but is a character that is loved.
Hold on a second, though.
Is this something Shovel Knight's not in?
I feel like he's in every game these days.
But that's Atomu. That's the Japanese anime character, right?
It is.
Like, one of the like most storied classic characters.
Yes, none over here.
How did you get that in your game?
We love Adam or Astro Boy and Tezuka. Yeah. I grew up reading a lot of it, watching the cartoons, and it seemed like a good match. Like, I haven't seen that character in a game since Treasure did that Astro Boy game for GBA.
Astro Boy, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a really cool match with characters like Quote in there and this kind of dynamic where he's a very wholesome character. You see Blackjack and it's a little bit more mature, but still a very generally wholesome character. And as a fan, I really wanted to see if there was a way to combine all these universes together in the kind of game that we were working on with Chris.
Yeah, it's seamless too. You know, as you can see, it works so well with the rest of the characters that we have in there. It's awesome.
Yeah, so there's a couple different modes here. There's single player, there's online stuff as well. Can you speak to any of those and how they work?
Single player, we have your standard arcade mode, which is similar to a fighting game where you move from match to match until you get to some boss fights.
Mm-hmm. Does each character have their own like sort of story, or is there like a set overgrowing?
There's kind of an overarching story that has brought all these characters into the same universe.
Okay.
So that it's kind of an explanation as to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Nicholas cinematic universe that's forming now?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's the most ambitious crossover since the last one.
We have a campaign mode where we have some kind of puzzles in between to kind of break up the gameplay and make it a little bit more of a story mode. We have lots of different ways to break down the game, and then tons of multiplayer, online, offline, ranked, unranked, all of that.
Nice, cool.
One to four players, everything in between.
Cool, very cool. It sounds like it's going to be quite the competitive game too, especially online. So, are there like leaderboards and all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely leaderboards. Mm-hmm. Definitely friendly matches too with friends, and you can organize leaderboards according to your friend list, your territory, or worldwide. So you can kind of see where you stack up in different places. We definitely paid attention to competitive as well. You know, we've got a lot of tweaks under the hood to make sure that this is fast and responsive, and it's great on the surface for casual players, but then the competitive scene is going to really appreciate what we've done with it as well.
Totally.
Pretty good timing. I mean, it seems like I'm a huge puzzle gamer, and especially on handhelds. Like, I don't always love when I'm in an airplane or I'm taking a trip to start a big sprawling story game. I think like Mario Odyssey, Zelda are kind of the exceptions because you can do like these kind of smaller quests and save wherever you want to. But like, I always gravitate towards puzzle games when I'm traveling. And there aren't actually that many big ones on Switch yet, right? Not you yet. Mentioned Puyo Tetris, obviously, is on there, and the a couple of smaller games, but like the kind of puzzle royalty hasn't arrived yet, so it's pretty good timing for you guys.
Until just now.
Yeah.
Do you have a release date set in mind for this?
We're announcing fall. We haven't gotten more specific than that yet, no.
Cool. Very cool.
That's awesome. Are you doing anything at E3?
Right now, no specific plans for E3. We have a lot. We found that with the type of games that we do, we get a lot of better exposure from different events. Whereas E3 is kind of saved for stuff that's like a more of an Odyssey type of game.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, like a big game.
I hear you. Yeah, it's obviously it's a big loud show. But you guys still attend and
we
meet,
still attend. Oh, we
meet people in back
meetings.
Rooms,
yeah,
and try to.
I can meet you in a back room if you have time.
Just like old times.
That kind of show.
It's all about family.
That's right.
Yeah, we're getting the band back together. That's pretty awesome.
So we were talking a little bit off camera too. You said that you Nicholas had been talking with Nintendo about developing for Switch for quite a while before it actually was even unveiled to the public, right? So yes. You guys had this really crazy, weird handheld console hybrid thing. Like, what were some of your initial thoughts? Just developing for Switch, or just coming at it with the right angle. What kind of games do we want to bring to this thing? Like, how did that feel for you guys?
We didn't know what it was because Nintendo was incredibly smart in every step of the way. They sent us this thing, and it was a screen with a bunch of wires, no Joy-Cons, anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like here's this thing. It's got a touchscreen. It's got a pretty good processor. It's got a good GPU on it. So do what you want to do. And for us, it was, okay, what do we want to play? It always comes down to like the games, like literally Ikaruga and Crystal Crisis is games that we want to play. The games that when we work with other developers and publish or co-develop games, it's do we want to play this game? Mm-hmm. And for us with the Switch, it made a lot of sense. It's like, okay, let's start with what people have been asking for on a Nintendo console. We did Isaac on new 3DS, but it was a bit of a limited release because it was only on new 3DS. And so the first thing we wanted to do was bring Isaac. Edmund's a huge fan of Nintendo, and he grew up playing Nintendo. And so that was the first thing we went for and see, like, okay, what else can we do on this? And we generally haven't hit any limits in terms of what the types of games that we want to make and we want to develop or publish. As far as the Switch, it's been a pretty good piece of hardware and fun for us.
Totally.
For some, you guys aren't exactly a small indie publishing house, right? You have some pretty big brands that we talked about, like Isaac is, I don't know if you ever announced how many copies you ship, but it's a ton, right? It's a very popular game. But like for some of the smaller indies, I think a new console is always scary, right? Do you put resources into creating a custom version? And I mean, you have to do some things that are a little different for this machine. So basically used Isaac as a test case, or did you become a believer pretty quickly once you played the machine?
Nicholas as a company started with the purpose of publishing and developing games for Nintendo consoles, starting with Cave Story for Wii. Mm-hmm. We did DSi, 3DS, new 3DS, Wii U. So literally every piece of Nintendo hardware since the Wii we put on. So for us, it was just, you've known me for a long time.
Yeah.
I love Nintendo. But the benefit with Isaac was we have our own internal engine, a few multiple engines, but mainly the 2D engine that we work with a lot of these games. Isaac is one of the games that's powered by that engine.
Mm-hmm.
So by getting Isaac running meant that, okay, it'll be easier to, what can we do with Cave Story and what can we do with other games that will eventually be running on this engine? So it was a very conscious choice to sort of build into the future as far as technology, which would allow us to do different things with the games that we did.
I love what you guys did with Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap, how it has that sort of like seamless transition between retro style and like newer graphics. I think that's so cool. And all the games that you have been putting out on Switch, in my opinion, have just been really smart, like super like hits, essentially that I've been noticing through social media. People still talk about how much they're playing Binding of Isaac on Switch. People still talk about Cave Story Plus and jumping into it for the first time, because I know that there were plenty of people out there who didn't play Cave Story on, DS. When it was available, or when it still is available, obviously, but now that it's on this newer console, nicer screen, you can play it on the TV, you can play it in handheld mode. It just makes so much sense. So yeah, thank you so much for just putting out great games constantly.
Thank you.
It's very cool.
And one thing I really appreciate is your focus on the physical copies as well.
Oh yeah,
like there are four of these machines in my house, and you can't, there's no family sharing with the Switch, right? And so whenever you download a game from the eShop, it's on that machine.
That's
and
it.
So you guys create cartridge versions of some of these smaller games, and like you guys do something special with them, right?
We try to. I still love physical games. It's more convenient. I'm not going to lie. It's more convenient for digital. It's effectively a jukebox. But for the idea of buying something that you really love, I grew up playing, you know, Genesis, Super Nintendo, TurboGrafx, and at least even something that we would overlook back then, like the manual and the warranty card, all that's gone. You open up a game like Mega Man now, and it's a white piece of paper with a cartridge in there. And come on, this is supposed to be special. It's a collection of my favorite games of my youth. Do something with it.
When I opened up Runner 3 for the first time, I got so happy. It felt like Christmas. Awesome. I was like, oh my God, there's all this stuff.
What was in it?
There was like an instruction manual. There's like a light up keychain in there. What else is in there?
And then we have a 3-inch soundtrack. So it's, remember those old Japanese 3-inch discs? We finally found a purpose for them. They fit inside.
Do they still work?
They work. They work. I had to go and buy a bunch of different CD players so that we could compatibility test the master CDs to make sure that they appeared properly. But it's been fun because it's the concept of keeping this really cool thing, and then it you can play it too.
But isn't that scary, Ty? I mean, like you're not just producing the game; you have to pay for the cartridge and the printing and everything. Now you're putting some tchotchkes in there. What if they sit on store shelves? What if they don't sell?
That's where we have to really be very particular with the developers that we partner up with.
Yeah.
And it motivates us to really market their games and get behind their games, where larger publishers might just pick a few games or just as a bullet point. It's like, oh, we need extra content. Mm. And for us, we really believe in the games that we choose. And for me personally, and for the rest of the team, I know they feel the same way. We want to be proud of what we've put together. So if it means spending more money on a CD, on a manual, on a light-up keychain, and knowing that the player opens that, and this reaction that you have where you really feel like it's Christmas or it feels like it's special.
And then you open
the manual and like the cartridge, and you get that really cool feeling. And people send us screenshots of like they're so happy to collect our games because they see that we love games as much as they do.
Yeah.
So are you thinking about Crystal Crisis? Like, do you do physical for that?
It'll be a physical game.
So anything that's kind of a bigger tier title, a new title, you're thinking about physical at the same time?
We try to, because the type of games we're making, I still believe that people who love games, they're definitely on a Nintendo platform. They're still hardcore true players, and they'll play the kind of games that we like.
Yeah.
Totally.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love in the Runner 3 manual, particularly when you're showing all the playable characters, there's like three of them there that you actually have to scratch, and it says scratch to reveal spoilers. That is such a genius idea.
So who comes up with that stuff?
We have an editorial director who he used to run Tips and Tricks magazine many years ago, Chris Bieniek, and he's one of the main people that we work with in our production team, where he does a lot of these really clever ideas as far as doing the editorial on them or kind of coming up with the ideas. And then we have a production artist who she does a lot of our concept art, but she does a lot of our covers as well. So she did the It'll Do 2 cover, she did the Cave Story cover, and she's just amazing. She actually used to work on Mega Man X 5 and 6. So she's got a pretty good pedigree in terms of she knows, and she loves games too. So it's a lot of fun working with all these crazy group of people who love putting together these special packages.
He's no scratch and sniff for Isaac 2, though.
Yes.
If you haven't played Isaac 2, there is a lot of poo in that game.
There's not enough.
In the first Isaac.
I don't think there's enough poo. Yeah. There could be more.
No, that's too much poo.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, both of you, on NBC.
Thank you for having us. Absolute pleasure having you guys.
That's our show this week, everyone. Thank you very much for watching and listening. We're a weekly show on IGN.com, and you can get our episodes early every Thursday at, I don't know when they go up anymore. It's all over the place. You know, we've been doing a live show, but we're getting ready for E3. And so we had to do a video on demand show, like a pre-recorded episode today. So sorry.
Packing up the studio.
Yeah, live audience. But don't worry, we're not done with live shows. We'll definitely keep doing them. So scheduling got a little crazy today. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You can catch us on youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat, or you can find us on IGN.com a day early, and you can also find us on all of your favorite podcast listening services. So we will see you guys next week. Listen.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.